joining us just a tad early today, Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, member of the board at Creation Moments, a good friend of the station, and he knows everything there is to know about wine, right?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. No.
Okay.
I know some things about wine.
Well, he is a
about winemaking.
Is a vendor, found a good way to put his. He was in the pharmaceutical industry for a long time too, but now he's taken all those scientific skills, and we still need to get you a white lab coat for your winemaking laboratory there.
Don. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need that.
I don't think my old lab coats would fit anymore.
neither do mine, come to think of it.
Yeah,
it's something we all face sooner or later. You and I have talked about old things often over the course of the last 7 years on the air here at Broken Road. And we've talked about mammoths, we've talked about whales, we've talked about DNA, and we've talked about the kinds of conclusions that evolutionists come to when these creatures are found. But there's another fly in the ointment, I've got to tell you, Don. Recently, scientists have, they found Siberian mammoths and extracted two teeth, and within those teeth they found small amounts of DNA. And they maintain this is the oldest DNA ever found, more than a million years old. And again, my eyebrow raises just a bit. Can DNA last a million years?
Well, that's a big if. Of course, they found, previously, and we've talked about it on this program, finding protein in cells, not living cells, but ghosts of bone cells in dinosaur tissue. And, protein will last longer than DNA will. DNA is a huge molecule or molecules. And it breaks up very, very easily. But, of course, the argument is, well, this is in Siberia, so it's very, very cold there. And the cold, keeps the DNA from breaking up, just like it kept the woolly mammoth from breaking up, because, they found several of them even standing upright with the contents in their stomach. Now, I don't know exactly where these particular teeth came from. They said Siberia. A lot of the mammoths, of course, have been found in Siberia. Well,
they claim there are millions of mammoths. I don't know that they found millions. They found bunches of them, or herds of them, maybe. How do you suppose they dated this mammoth to a million years? Because carbon dating doesn't go back a million years. What makes them think this mammoth was a million years old?
Oh, just because of the environment around that area. They describe, they would describe, for example, that environment would be in the layer that they're in would be about a million years old. But it's all speculation. That's the problem. And there is little science here to really judge the age of these things. But, from a creation point of view, we know the approximate age that they probably went extinct, and we know the reason why they went extinct. Evolutionists are hard-pressed to even come up with a reasonable rationale as to how a mammoth could, these are essentially elephants, hairy elephants. They're the size of elephants. They're basically hairy elephants. How these hairy elephants could survive in the frigid cold of the Siberian climate? Well, of course, the answer to the question is they can't survive in that cold climate, nor would they be able to find the massive amount of food that would be required. And the massive amount of food, just like in Africa, you need a lot of growth, you need a lot of vegetation, you need a lot of trees. And these mammoths, of course, didn't have that, especially at the end of their life. But the The flood takes care of, if you ignore the flood, ignore that there was a global catastrophe, ignore all the subsequent events of the flood, you're hard-pressed to even come up with an explanation.
Well, this doesn't make sense without it. And I want to mention to folks who are listening in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com, there is a link to this article. And in this article from the Institute for Creation Research, you'll see this picture of a mammoth standing in the snow. Now, in my mind, a mammoth is a lot like an elephant would be herbivorous, would eat leaves and, you know, plant matter. And that's what they found in their stomachs. There's no question they could not have survived in Siberia, because we're at 40 below, where do you find plant matter that's edible? So this one, the picture is somebody's vivid imagination. And two, the notion that they actually survived in that climate is wrong, too. So what are the variables? Mammoths may have morphed from some other animal that maybe withstood cold climate. The time frame could be all wrong, or the climate may not have been constant. It's not like it is today.
And I think at least two of those are correct, in that the time frame is all wrong for these things, and the climate was much different than it is today. Now, why was it different? Well, we have to go back to the flood to explain that. In order to have, for example, you know, the Washington, West Coast is that temperature is moderated, if you will, by the temperature of the ocean. So a warmer ocean would mean warmer climate on that part of the continent. And it's pretty much the reason why, Seattle and the other areas are not frozen, but are at least, 70, 80 degrees during the summer. Of course, it gets cold there in the winter. And similar type of conditions could have, and probably did, we have evidence of this certainly in Canada, the same type of thing probably happened in Siberia as well, that in order for that to happen, you would have to have warmer waters so that winds and wind current, for example, would take that warmer temperature and carry it across land, which would have normally have been a much colder environment, to make it a warmer environment. And that's exactly what they found, like I said, in the Canadian part, where mammoths have also been found. But Siberia would have been the same thing. And so what would explain the warmer temperatures of the waters, for example? Obviously, the waters aren't warm anymore, and not bringing that warm air across the land like it once did. So, what has changed? Well, we've spoken about how before the flood, the earth was one landmass, and then at the time of the flood, the landmass began to break apart into the continents that we have today. And it's well known that the continent adrift theory, for example, is pretty well established now. The only thing in question is how fast did the continents drift apart?
And the continental drift theory does not conflict in any way with what we read in Genesis.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Matter of fact, it corroborates some of the things that we find in Genesis. And so if you have the continents breaking apart, then you're making a new seafloor, because, you've got the rift in the middle of the ocean, for example, or the rifts in the middle of the oceans that is creating new ocean floor. But that new ocean floor is hot. Because it's coming from below the mantle and stuff. And so you've got magma that is coming up, and that would heat up the waters, you know, even more. That heating up of the waters, so you need warm water, so you could put a lot of moisture into the atmosphere in order to have, for example, an ice age in the first place. In other words, to have massive amounts of ice and snow, you have to be pumping a lot of water into the atmosphere. And the way you do that is you have warm water. And the way you have warm water is while the temperature was more temperate before the flood. And of course, with the continents breaking up, you had a lot of volcanic activity, which would have shaded some of the sun, well, a lot of the sunlight, for example, but it would also have created, like I said, these rifts in the ocean, which we know, you know, obviously exist, and that then would create a point of heat coming up from under the surface of the mantle of the Earth, creating warming, you know, warming the temperatures of the water. Thus, having warm water, you have more water in the atmosphere. You have all of the right conditions in order to form the ice age or ice ages, if you will, because this would have happened, would have happened sporadically. You would have, for example, the continents moving probably faster at some points and slower at other points. And so in more volcanic activity at some points than others, this would have created the appearance of multiple layers in the ice and the snow, for example, from the dust from the volcanoes, that would have given the impression that, oh, you know, these ice, these layers in the snow, they call it each year. And so part of the way of dating how old the mammoths were was because of the ice layers and the dark and light areas in the ice, where they, you know, found these things, and they attribute it to a year.
So we're talking about a global climate change as a result of the Genesis flood, the Great Flood, the worldwide flood, and that took, 600, 700 years, 800 years for the continents to drift and for the effects of the flood to subside and to get back to some form of stability. Is that accurate?
Well, it certainly would have taken about that long for the continents to drift apart. Now, you know, of course, they attributed the evolutionists attributed, you know, the drifting of the continents to millions of years, but they measure things in today's standards. So the continents are still drifting a little bit, and they're not moving apart that fast. But at the time of the flood, where all of this was going on, you would have had massive amounts of movement taking place until you reached another equilibrium in the system, that has been shown to be the case, because as the land masses, for example, on the West Coast, you've got this abduction of the Pacific Ocean floor going under the California and the West Coast, that if it's real rapid, would have caused melting of those layers, of those rock layers, and that in itself would have been a lubricant for those layers to slide past each other much more quickly than they actually do today, because things have slowed down. But it's estimated between 500 to 700 years, this whole process would have taken place. Still would have had, you know, the ice age kind of going on during that period. As the ice age starts slowing down, as the waters start cooling down, you wouldn't have as much moisture being pumped into the atmosphere, so the snow would begin to subside. But you would have another thing happen. As that is cooling, as everything is cooling down, you would, of course, the temperatures are would be beginning to drop, but where there was grassland, for example, would, because of the lack of moisture, you would have things drying up, and then you would, with the cold wind coming from the oceans instead of the warm wind, and the differences in temperature between the land and the water, you would have had tremendous amount of windstorms, and the windstorms kicking up a large amount of dust from the earth, from the drying earth, would create these tremendous dust storms. And indeed, we find mammoths, for example, buried under, you know, hundreds of feet of dust. And that would explain, you know, their extermination, if you will, that these dust storms would have come upon them very, very rapidly. And, you know, so, they're buried, you know, standing up with their little ones next to them and stuff in their stomach and everything. And then the temperatures, you know, drop precipitously and kind of freeze everything as in, you know, frozen in time, which indeed they were. So how long ago did all of this take place? You know, was this millions of years ago? Are the mammoths millions of years old, as claimed, you know, in the beginning of this article, or at least by the evolutionists? Well, of course not. If this happened at the time of the flood, we're talking about 44 to 4,500 years, 100 years ago, thousands of years ago, not millions of years ago. And so to find then DNA in a tooth of a mammoth that is frozen in the tundra is not all that surprising. And we should indeed find, other biological evidence that, hey, these animals that lived back then really aren't that old. And it's quite nicely explained by the post-events of the flood.
Well, it seems to me that the claim that they're a million years old and that DNA might have been preserved because of the cold temperatures in Siberia is a real long shot. And a much more logical conclusion is the mammoth isn't that old.
Right. Yeah. And so if the mammoth isn't that old, maybe our models are wrong as to, what caused the ice ages and how long ago, because they, you know, the ice age, they claim are millions and millions of years, ago. And I think the last one, it's been a little while since I've studied this, but don't hold me to it. 10 million, 20 million years ago, the ice ages, and there were multiple ice ages. But, you know, all of that flies out the window when you take the Earth's history as recorded in, at least starting to be recorded in Genesis, and take that into account and take those geological changes that are described in the Bible for actual fact, and use that in your exploration, then you begin to understand that, well, you know, things really aren't that old.
Seems to me that having the Bible at your fingertips and all that history in Genesis and elsewhere in the Bible, and I think too about the book of Job, which may be the oldest book in the Bible, referring to what could be interpreted as an ice age, snow and ice and cold. That's the one place in the Bible where it's really mentioned. That fitting that scenario together with what they know from science should actually confirm and encourage scientists that they now have the answer in conjunction with the history that's in Genesis. This just still goes beyond me why evolution is considered to be the settled science of the earth, which makes no sense. Now, you have talked from time to time, and I want to hit on this topic again because it's fascinating to me, that prior to the flood, there was a more uniform climate from north to south on the earth than we see today. And I'm wondering if, you know, the tilt of the earth may have actually been changed at that same time. I can see all the Pangaea, the single continent, with, if I can picture the Earth vertical instead of tilted 15 degrees, if that would account for the more uniform climate. What do you think?
Well, actually, that brings in another subject, which is not related necessarily to the time of the flood, but post-flood. Now, you know, civilizations, you know, in the past, of course, had a record of you know, their dating systems and their timing systems, if you will. Many civilizations, ancient civilizations, had 360 days as their you know, calendar year.
They studied the heavens and understood them, did they not?
They did, but you know, now we have 365 and a quarter as our days, based on the rotation of the Earth around the Sun. So something either, you know, either they got it wrong, which is highly unlikely because they were smarter than us, or something happened to the Earth, you know, somewhere in between there. Now, if you go back and look at the ancient literature, you find out that every 700 years there was a scare. It was like, oh my goodness, we're having all this activity, and all that activity was probably earthquakes and rumblings and probably some volcanoes happening about every 700 years or so. Until one great day, and that happens to be another biblical event, which is Joshua's longest day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when, you know, as long as Moses held his hands up, you know, Joshua was defeating the enemies there, and when Moses let his hands down, his, you know, the Israeli armies began to lose.
The dreaded Amorites, as I recall.
Yes, and so they needed more time to complete the battle. And so they propped up Moses' arm, so that saved, that was solved one problem. But the other was they were running out of time. And so God allowed, for example, the day to be extended, and so that the battle continued and didn't stop, and then they went on, and of course the Israelites wound up winning the battle. Joshua wound up winning the battle. Well, it just so happens that this coincides with this every 700 year period, and what now seems to be a reasonable explanation for what happened was that every 700 years Mars comes into close proximity to the Earth, and at that particular time Mars exchanged angular energy, for example, with the Earth, and so the you know, the Earth's rotation slowed down a little bit, and maybe the tilt of the Earth changed a bit. And the same thing happened to Mars, except it probably sped up a little bit because they were exchanging energy, and you got to have equal amounts of energy being exchanged there. And so we actually went from 360 day year to a 365 and a quarter day year after that event.
Yeah, that's interesting. Although it also suggests to me that, and this comes from various sources of my own study, that God works within the laws that he established for the functioning of the universe. So I would probably say he didn't do that to benefit the Israeli war effort, but he knew they would coincide.
Yes,
and said, exactly. If you just do this, everything will work out fine.
But here's the amazing thing, that he set that in motion.
Mm-hmm.
At the creation of the Earth, and of course creation of the universe and Mars and the solar system and all that, he set that in motion so that it would time perfectly to this event. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
He's pretty amazing. Yeah, well, that probably should wrap it up, because we've got We got music ahead for everybody. And Don, we thank you so much. Learned something today about mammoths and about climate and about Joshua and his faithfulness, as a matter of fact. Speaks to that as well. Don, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. If you go there and visit, you'll discover that they have resources galore and scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. So we recommend a visit to that. And Don, thanks again for your, thanks for coming on early for us too, accommodating our schedule shift today. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, sounds great.
Be well. Bye-bye.
You have a good week.